This is The Evening Buzz, presented by Mikhail Attia.
When it comes to the Middle Earth franchise, we have had some ups and downs. One of the greatest things that has ever happened was the fact that we even got the Lord of the Rings trilogy adapted by a team of filmmakers who really understood the challenge, the tremendous challenge of adapting that book into screen. And it's Peter Jackson and his team of screenwriters who spent years in pre-production just to get it right. And it almost never happened, by the way. We would have never had a Lord of the Rings trilogy. We would have had two movies, perhaps even one, just crammed all into one adaptation. It would have been awful, and it would have been looked at as a case study of how not to adapt a fantasy book like this. But after all that, we ended up with one of the greatest award-winning fantasy action trilogies in cinema history, and it deserves it. And so there was definitely this expectation to see what Peter Jackson could do next in the world of Middle Earth. And after a lot of complication, he did manage to direct the Hobbit trilogy, but with a production that felt extremely rushed for him and his team. And you can really feel it. The Hobbit movies are fine, but they could have been perfect. And that is really the greatest tragedy, is that Peter Jackson was not given the time to flush out these films properly because of a lot of studio politics. And because of this, Peter Jackson has not directed any movie since. He's been in dormancy for so long, and people wonder if he'll ever jump back in. This is a man who was extremely passionate about adapting Middle Earth. And there is a lot about Middle Earth that has yet to been adapted or explored, as many studios such as Amazon right now with The Rings of Power, and even with Warner Bros. Coming out with the animated adaptation for War of the Rohirrim. So the franchise of Lord of the Rings is alive and well, and we're going to get future adaptations, but one from Peter Jackson is quite the enigma. Here, the thing is that one of the next greatest challenges is adapting J.R.R. Tolkien's Magnus Opus, which is The Silmarillion. This is a book that details the very early ages of Middle-earth that takes back thousands of years before The Lord of the Rings, and trying to adapt this to screen has always been a daunting task, both for the fans and the Tolkien estate. But there has been some reports that suggest a significant shift in this stance. Amazon's Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power series, now in its second season, has gained permission to incorporate some elements of the Silmarillion into it, which means that there is a significant departure from previous reluctance from the Tolkien estate, which could perhaps mean that someone like Peter Jackson might feel compelled to jump back in and perhaps helm a movie adaptation of The Silmarillion. Warner Bros. Still has technically the rights to the film version of Lord of the Rings, so they can kind of go from there with the Tolkien estate permission and blessing. Maybe we can also see some future development that could really spark a full-blown adaptation. And by the way, Peter Jackson himself has expressed a long-standing desire to tackle The Silmarillion, seeing it as the opportunity to delve deeper into the origins of Middle Earth. However, the problem is that his burnt out experience with the Hobbit trilogy has left him with a very bad taste, a sour taste for making movies. And I just hope that if he does get a chance, that the executives and the people that hire him give him the time he needs to be able to adapt this properly and get it right, because I know he can. It's really difficult in an industry like this where you have the bureaucracy and you have the creative, and the creative needs time to polish things and get things right, but the bureaucracy puts on deadlines and rushes the creative, and you end up with something that may be, I would say, substantial, but you knew it could have been perfect. And this is not what we want, especially from a franchise as grand as the Middle Earth. So honestly, even though these are just initial reports that suggest that Peter Jackson has some interest and perhaps that there could be a film adaptation in the future, I look at it as just wishful thinking, hoping. It's that law of attraction kind of feeling. Because if we can wish it to reality, it could happen. And I'd love to see a lot more of Tolkien's rich mythology be adapted. But the Silmarillion will be something I know every fan out there would love to see. And it's going to be perhaps, if done right, one of the greatest things that would ever come to cinema. But until then, all we can do is just hope for the best. What we do have later this year is Amazon's Rings of Power series, the second season. No trailer has come out yet, no teaser whatsoever. We're all just kind of hoping that they learn from their past mistakes and continue to develop something that's worthwhile for the fans. Let's take a short break, and coming up next, CD Projekt Red, the Polish studio behind The Witcher and Cyberpunk 2077, has went on public, ruling out that microtransactions or even paywalls in single-player games are not condoned by them, which is a philosophy I hoped other studios would also follow. Let's talk about that and so much more right here on The Evening Buzz. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Pulse 95.
Pulse 95.
The recent release of Dragon's Dogma 2 by Capcom has received so much controversy. But here's the thing. The controversy really comes from the fact that the game had microtransactions. Dragon's Dogma 2 is an action-adventure single-player game. And yet, it had paywalls where people can basically buy in-game shortcuts to make the game a lot more convenient. And so that brings into question, why are you creating an obstacle or the superficial problem for a player only to sell them the superficial solution? And it's purely because there's money to be made by this. They know that there's some players who are not, that don't have the patience or the diligence to, you know, perhaps want to find the items to fast travel or find the items to resurrect their party, and can just pay $1, $2, who cares? Doesn't matter. But it does add up, because if you can get a percentage of that player base used to that kind of microtransaction, there's some money to be made from that. And it comes off as a bit predatory, because then it makes you think, how are they designing this game to accommodate some monetization system? Now, they're not the only ones who've been doing this. There's been many games out there, many studios that have been doing this for many years. It's only now just starting to become conscience in the community of gamers. One big example is definitely Ubisoft with the Assassin's Creed franchise, who have all these like little boosters and in-game shortcut items you can acquire for real money. And it defeats the purpose of that sense of reward you'd get when you play a game, or when you're exploring its world and achieving its missions, when you can just zip right through it with in-game shortcut items. So yeah, it's I never condone microtransactions in single player. And there's some studios that have taken this philosophy to an even extra step. CD Projekt Red, the Polish studio behind some games like The Witcher and Cyberpunk 2077, have went on public saying that their intentions of implementing microtransactions in single-player games is unacceptable. They will not condone it. Matter of fact, they won't adhere to it. The chief financial officer of CD Projekt Red responded to a question about whether the studio would implement microtransactions in future projects, And he says, we do not see a place for microtransactions in the case of single player games, but we do not rule out that we will use this solution in the future in the case of multiplayer projects. Now, in multiplayer projects, it's a lot more acceptable because sometimes a multiplayer game is free to play. So how does the studio or the developer behind it make money? Well, they make money by the fact that they sell you seasonal passes or, you know, extra cosmetics, all these little things, so long as it doesn't come off as predatory. Now, I can go on a whole rant talking about microtransactions for multiplayer, but if we are going to implement microtransactions, multiplayer is perhaps the only platform in which I can tolerate it, because it doesn't hinder my enjoyment of multiplayer games to a point. I do have a whole nother opinion about that, but we won't jump into it. Paywalls in single player games are unacceptable, and Dragon's Dogma 2 being the recent suspect of this just shows that studios are still trying to find ways to, you know, maneuver this, trying to go around the bush, trying to find different ways to make single player games more than just the experience, but also a monetization system that's as lucrative as multiplayer, because that's where the cash cow comes from. Is if you have a robust live service and you have some paywalls on it and some monetary incentives, then yeah, you got yourself something that's worthwhile, and it's what some big publishers try to go for. But single player is something that still a lot of gamers strongly don't condone to have microtransactions in, because it actually affects the game's overall design. You have to design around this to actually fit it in, and players will not, they just don't like it. They won't accept it. Perhaps you got that percentage out there that might condone it, but the rest really don't. And so yeah, I think that's my take as well on it. I think for as long as how this industry still continues to find different ways to monetize their games, it's here to stay, unfortunately. Because the question that these developers and publishers are trying to find out is, once you sell a copy of a single player game, how can we continue to make more money off of it? And so this is definitely a question or a problem that they're trying to find a solution for. And the most recent attempts by Capcom, they know it's not gonna bode well. But yeah, this is not gonna stop anytime soon. And my job really is to call them out on it. And I'll continue to call out on all of these other studios that try to do the same. But also give some shout out to studios who adhere to a more strict philosophy of not putting microtransactions in single player games. Let's take a short break, and coming up next, we're talking about Warner Bros. As they're attempting now to make another Matrix movie. Why? That's my question. Let's talk about it right here on the Evening Buzz. Stay tuned.
Pulse 95.
Warner Bros. Tried so hard a couple years back to bring, or at least revive, the Matrix franchise with a fourth installment in the series during the pandemic. You can imagine how big of a train wreck that was. It was nice to see Keanu Reeves reprising his role as Neo, but the story and the sequel never justified itself. It was bad. It was the kind of cash crab type of bad, where it's like, yeah, you know why this was made. It was awful in so many ways, and the general reception for it was mostly negative. Even for me, I went through the trouble of watching that film and did not like it. And this is coming from someone who watched the original films in the early 2000s. Now, those movies defined cinema for a time. They were part of that, you know, movie culture, and they kind of are. But they did something back then that was deemed impossible and was successful for it. So for a fourth installment, it really needed to justify itself, and it didn't. And here we are again, wondering why Warner Bros. Is tackling this dead franchise. I think it's dead. But this is what happens in Hollywood, you know? Recycled ideas. Regurgitate. Forget new. Don't do anything new. Don't do anything original. Just recycle. So, Warner Bros. Recently revealed plans for a fresh installment in the Matrix saga. And they're bringing in a director named Drew Goddard, who's known for his work on World War Z and The Martian, taking helm as the director. Now, originally, the Matrix films were directed by the Wachowski sisters. But apparently, they're going to they're only going to be executive producers at the moment. Now, according to some of the reports here, a top executive at Warner Bros. Said that it was Drew Goddard who pitched a new idea for the franchise that promises to honor its legacy while offering a fresh perspective on its future. Given the mixed reception of Resurrection, I wouldn't say mixed, I'd say mostly negative, which some found perplexing and others criticized for its parody-like sequences, there's curiosity about the new direction that this film might take in both narrative and tone. I don't know. I think this is one of those things where it's an elevator pitch that's gone to the point of being greenlit and now given a budget, and it's an attempt from Warner Bros. To keep that franchise alive. And not sure if today's audiences would enjoy another Matrix. It was a relic of its time. It has some relevancy, but I don't think it has the same relevancy that they're hoping for right now. I even compare it to James Cameron with the Avatar movies. The first one was great. Why are you making five more of these? But yeah, regarding cast or any new details, it still remains a mystery whether any of the original actors will reprise their roles. I don't think they should. Keanu Reeves, please move on to better things. Matrix was a relic of its time. You did your part. And I don't think it's enough to have Keanu come back to this movie to help save it. If Warner Bros. Is hoping to revive that Matrix franchise, it needs to do it in a better way. There needs to be some kind of strategy here. That pitch must have been really great from Drew Goddard to be able to actually greenlight this project, because I really have no faith in it. But I am curious, almost deathly curious, as to how they're going to pull this off. Because if it does actually end up working, I'll give them credit where credit will be due. But until then, only time will tell. They might even cancel this. They might do like a little test development, and then Warner Bros. Like, yeah, just cancel it. We'll see. But Matrix 5, yes, a fifth one now, is in development, or at least for now. How do you feel about it? Do let me know. Text me 4215. It's love or do. We're going to take a short break coming up next. Just quickly, I want to talk about Sharjah's very own live streaming service, Mariah, and why you should be downloading it right here on The Evening Buzz. Stay tuned.
If you liked this episode of The Evening Buzz, drop a like and subscribe. Be sure to follow us on Instagram for all our daily updates and top stories.